Talk News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 22nd of June, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And I'm Alex Vanderwill.
And it's
another forehead!
Two foreheads, the battle of the foreheads. And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can lose, things to choose.
Now we need them to put letters on their forehead so we know which one is which.
We have a J and an A out back there.
Well, it's preferable to having L's on our foreheads, but what can
exactly.
You do?
All right, let's start with the news. Secure Mac and Intego, or Stratego, are separately reporting the existence of a new security threat for Mac, claiming the existence of multiple variants of a new Trojan horse in the wild that affects Mac OS 10, 10.4, and 10.5. The Trojan horse is currently being distributed from a hacker website where distribution has taken place. On distributing the Trojan horse through iChat and discussion has taken place on distributing the Trojan horse through iChat and LimeWire. The Trojan horse runs hidden on the system and allows a malicious user complete remote access to the system, can reportedly transmit system and user passwords, and can avoid detection by opening ports in the firewall and turning off system logging. Additionally, the AppleScript.tht Trojan horse can log keystrokes, take pictures with the built-in Apple iSight camera, take screenshots, and turn on file sharing. The Trojan horse exploits a recently discovered vulnerability with the Apple Remote Desktop Agent, which allows it to run as root. The Trojan is distributed either as a compiled Apple script called ASTHTV05, which is 60K in size, or an application bundle called ASTHT_V06, which is 3.1 megabytes in size. The user must download and open the Trojan horse in order to become infected. But we all know how common that actually is.
Something pops up and says download, you're going to say yes. And when something pops up and asks for your password, you're going to give it.
Exactly. It always happens. Once the Trojan horse is running, it will move itself into the /library/caches folder, add itself to the system login items. In response, Secure Mac and Intego have both issued updated virus definitions to their security software applications for Mac, Mac Scan 2.5.2, and Intego Virus Barrier X5. So we've answered two questions today. Yes, there are real viruses for the Mac out there. And yes, there are at least two companies making antivirus software for the Mac.
Trojan.
Trojan, not a virus.
Well, right. It's a Trojan. Okay. Right.
Malicious software. I actually got to install my first piece of non-malicious spyware.
Non-malicious spyware. Some parent wanted to track what their kids were doing.
A business owner wanted to make sure his employees weren't goofing off on his time.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. It takes a picture of the screen every few seconds, and so you can go back and see what they were doing. But there's also been cases of basically LoJack for laptops. Now that so many laptops have cameras built in, that the camera will take a picture of the person that stole your laptop and publish his IP address. And,
nice!
And then you give that information to the police and hope they know what to do with it.
Yeah, right.
I've long wondered, while looking at my IMAX camera, how long is it going to be before somebody else decides to take my picture?
That's
apparently,
exactly right.
They've... Now I can look for it.
Well, the little green light comes on when the camera's active.
And that's what I look for, the green light. So now I'm thinking, okay, I can put some white out over the over the lens.
Yeah.
Well, as this laptop actually is a cover for the lens.
Yeah. Well, as any good journalist knows, when they yell at you to turn that camera off, you have electrical tape and just cover the green light.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing that we should say to folks, though, is right now if you're using Firefox 3... and you're trying to listen to the stream here on WHAM, there still is an issue with that IE program that they told you to go and get. Even though it says it'll work with Firefox 3, oh, it won't. There's an issue. They're working on it. Unlike the rest of the programs out there, Firefox works on things right away. So you just got to be patient. So if you're not hearing it on the stream, that is why in using Firefox 3. You can still go back to the old Firefox. Uninstall Firefox 3 and go back to 2, and it'll work.
There you go. I love three. It's a little odd getting used to the way they've done things. It's a little different. But
well, I love being able to just put in the name of the website, not even www, just put in the, say, like Soundbites. And
well, every other browser than IE has always done that. It fills in the W's in the com for
this
you.
This one has always done that, but this is a new thing.
It'll search out.
Anything that you've ever put in before, you get a list of all of them. So if you went to Sound Alike, Sound Alert, they'll all come up. And
we've always had that in
And
Mac.
It's a nice list. It's a nice list.
Did you have the story about the Guinness record Firefox download thing?
No, but I was going to mention that.
Yeah, they had over 8 million downloads in a day.
They were hoping for 5.
And their servers were up and down all day long.
Yes, they were.
I got it on Tuesday, no problem.
Yep.
Yeah, they were.
Tuesday. Had it in seconds, but it was still a beta. I didn't want beta.
Well, the real one didn't show up until about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, it was in the afternoon.
But yeah, it's out. Tuesday was the official launch date for Firefox 3. They were hoping for 5 million downloads. They got 8. I don't know that there are 8 million people using it. I, for example, downloaded it on my desktop and my laptop, so that's two for one. But still,
same here.
But still, there's, you know, at the very least, they had 4 or 5 million people.
And on the Joy of Tech cartoon was the Firefox icon going, great, 8 million downloads. And the Safari icon saying tramp, and the Internet Explorer icon saying slot. And
But yeah, that's what we had. All right, our first caller of the day, Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
Good. Okay. I have got a wireless network set up. I've got a Mac laptop and a desktop, and I just got an iTouch. My friend set it up with the password, and he told me what it was. I went into the iTouch, and it says password. I put it in. It doesn't work. My question is, how do I, and he's out of town, so I can't even ask him, how do I change the password? I mean, I have no idea how to go in without, you know, erasing all the...
Well, there's several different passwords involved. Your wireless network password is one, and then your router administration password should be something completely different.
Okay.
So you have to log into your router and find the setting for the wireless password and change it there.
Well, wait a minute. I'm confused, Linda, and that's normal for me. Your Mac laptop talks to your Mac desktop, talks to the internet, fine.
No, I got a PC laptop. I got a PC desktop.
Right, and those all talk to each other, fine.
He set that all up, but I just got the iTouch. He set that all up and put in the password I told him to put in. But now, when I go to the wireless network on my iTouch, it says, what's the password? And I put it in, and for some reason, it's not recognizing it.
Does your Mac connect to the network wired or wirelessly?
Wirelessly.
You can look in the keychain utility and see what your wireless password is, but then you need the computer's administrator password. So that's a third password yet. So you have to know your passwords, basically. So you can look in under applications, under utilities, the keychain utility. And in the Mac, that stores all of your passwords, your email password and your website password, your wireless password, under its own password, so it's a convenient place to keep passwords.
Okay. Okay. Now, I'm not computer literate, so he set it up on my... Is there anything on my desktop to tell me what these passwords are?
Not unless he created a file saying, here are your passwords, which is a very dangerous thing to do, because then anyone could find that.
Right.
No.
The other thing is you have to be fairly careful if the password has uppercase and lowercase letters in it. You have to follow those exactly.
I don't think he did. I think he just put them all in lowercase.
Yeah, I'm afraid that you're going to have to talk to the guy who actually put in your passwords to find out what those are.
Or you can do the factory reset on your router and change all the passwords back to empty and then set it up again, which is annoying.
I haven't got the faintest idea what that is.
No, you better wait for him and he'll tell you what the password is. I'm sorry, Linda, but he'd better. I mean, anybody who sets up a network, it better have awfully good records.
Otherwise, they got to do a factory reset, which sets everything back to the day it came out of the box and just reestablish the passwords all over again.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thanks, Linda. That is one of the biggest problems we all seem to run into. We get these calls, I forgot my password.
Well, it's because average people are now network administrators, and you must remember all this stuff.
Right, and if you're going to write them down, here, the best thing to do is to find one of those many, many password vault things. Passkeeper, pass vault, password RoboForm. Vault, RoboForm, any one of a dozen. Well, RoboForm doesn't encrypt well enough.
And on the Mac, that's built in the keychain utility.
The right. new so Linux, the version that you pay for, does a pretty good job. It'll generate one for you. That's what I've got. It's one that you pay for.
So, yeah, if you pay for that one, you want to be very careful of that. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer,
Alex Vanderwell.
Vanderwell, sorry. Nick Francesco and you, Soundbites 1180 WHAM. Sorry. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And I'm Alex Vanderwell.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, here's a surprise. Antitrust regulators are evaluating the forthcoming Windows 7 and Internet Explorer 8 as part of ongoing activities to ensure Microsoft is in compliance with the final judgment in two landmark antitrust cases that involved individual states and the United States government.
They haven't been so far. What makes them think they're going to now?
Yeah, exactly. Microsoft and antitrust regulators also said they were concentrating on revising and extending documentation the software company is making available as part of its Microsoft Communications Protocol Program, or MCPP. Release schedules have also been finalized. The details were released in a joint status report filed Tuesday. The plaintiffs, including New York, California, Florida, and a host of other states, authored half the report with a focus on enforcement, while Microsoft authored the other half with a focus on compliance. The update is the first since the previous status report issued February 29th, which is to stand for 6 months. The compliance reviews are part of a November 2002 consent decree, which was extended earlier this year into 2009. They are continuing to evaluate Internet Explorer 8 to discover any remaining middleware-related issues. Internet Explorer and its integration with the Windows operating system was a central focus in the antitrust cases. As part of the final judgment in the cases, Microsoft must disclose middleware interfaces and service protocols. The committee also wrote that Microsoft has recently given it access to the latest build of Windows 7 for review. The technical committee said it would validate compliance and conduct middleware-related tests to ensure bugs fixed in Vista don't find their way into Windows 7. Now, look at this. The United States government is doing Microsoft's Q&A testing for them. What the heck? The committee said it would expand its review process of middleware defaults by examining operating system source code and default browser overrides. So it looks like the government continues to be fairly diligent in their watchdog role over Microsoft for that 2002 consent decree. And in terms of antitrust, which is a very good thing. The European Union, of course, as we reported recently, is suing the buttocks off of Microsoft for violation of that of a similar dissent decree that they have in with them. And it's an interesting problem that Microsoft is facing. On the one hand, they've got to, you know, thread a fine line between innovation, which they're always, you know, allowed to do, and monopolistic practices, which are, which sometimes come from it. I mean, how do you say, okay, you talk about innovation. I've created something no one else has ever done, and I'm only going to write it for my operating system. Is that innovation, or is that a monopolistic practice? It's, I, you know, I'm not, God knows I'm not a Microsoft apologist, but that's a tough call.
It's a gray area.
Yeah, that's a very tough call. What's my motivation is really what they're saying, and how can you tell? You know, you can assume they're always the bad guys. You can assume they're always the good guys. But I'll guarantee you, like everything else, it's somewhere in the middle. And of course, Bill Gates has just stepped down as chairman of as you know, day to day. He's not gonna run the place anymore. Steve Ballmer is running the place. We'll see how well and or badly.
It hasn't gone well so far.
Not
crazy, Steve Ballmer.
I mean, he's shaking his feet now, trying to get the stink off of it.
Well, just think about this from a logical perspective for a moment. Apparently, the government is insisting that Microsoft demonstrate that there are no holes or undocumented patches.
Right.
That's almost tantamount to proving a negative.
It is almost tantamount to that, but they have access to the source code.
And yeah, who understands that?
Well, they've got to hire. I mean, it can't be, you know, it's not going to be the senators.
Well, that was the two.
One they don't understand anything anyway.
The two big points in the monopoly lawsuits were that Microsoft was not telling third-party developers all the cool things they could do underneath it. And one of the specific ones was the print button. You click the print button in a Microsoft program and it prints. And in every other program, it asks you how many copies you want to print.
Right.
And then the other thing was on dealers is that, and we ran into this a little bit as system builders for Microsoft in our PC business at Jesse Group, that if we want to include Windows on a model computer, we have to include Windows on every computer.
Yeah, that's what I don't get.
We have to pay for Windows on every computer specifically.
Right, you don't have to provide it, you just have to pay for it.
So if we didn't put Windows on one of our computers, we still had to pay Microsoft a license for it. And that was the deal that Microsoft made with OEM system builders.
And if that
that was the deal they gave to OEM system
builders. Right, they gave
the
system
builders. Shoved down their throats.
Yeah.
Because that sounds certainly like a monopolistic practice.
Well, that's the point.
To this layman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's why you're not a lawyer.
Right.
Nor do you play one on television.
Nor would I consider the job.
Exactly. But yeah, that's an interesting set of circumstances that we're going to keep following it. I've got another couple of stories in here dealing with things like, I don't know if I took that one. Linux is out. There are more developers. That was it. There are more developers for Linux right now than there are for. I didn't put it in here. But there are more developers. Oh, here it is, right here in front of me. It's the very first one. I'll read it now. Why not? Microsoft used to be popular with the developer crowd, but not anymore. A recent report shows fewer than 1 in 10 developers are writing applications for Windows Vista this year. 8%. This is even worse, showing 49% are writing applications for Windows XP. Linux is getting lots of love from developers. 13% are writing apps for it this year. 15.5% next year, the developers themselves have estimated. There is no data from Evans Data about the Mac, so we don't know about that one. But
well, most of the development these days is coming on the web, so it's Java and Ruby, and it doesn't matter what computer you're using, which is really scaring Microsoft.
Right, that's exactly right. But
and
you
should
know,
be scaring Mac users.
Right, but this is the thing. Microsoft really is kind of handicapping itself, you know? They close their system, they don't tell their developers everything, and then they say, well, but come and develop for us. Well, why? If I go to open source, I know everything.
Exactly.
It's a level playing field, and I can get as much or as little respect as I actually deserve, as opposed to as much as you'll give me. So they really can't have it both ways. It's a real dichotomy right now, and people are just a tiny bit porked off at Microsoft about these things, and so they just don't want to develop. And who wants to develop for Vista? Nobody's buying it.
Well, it seems that in this 21st century, their business model is rapidly becoming obsolete. They've got to change the tune.
Well, that's exactly it, and they don't know where to go. It's like they weren't ready for the internet, and they're not ready for the 21st century. It's an interesting problem. All right, we are going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a moment or so. We have Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, Alex Vanderwall, me, Nick Franchek. They each looked up as I said their names. It was kind of these little heads popping up. It's like whack-a-mole on the computer.
Prairie dogging.
I'm Nick Francesco. It's 30 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And I'm Alex Vanderwell.
And it's 31 minutes after the hour. Just a little update on the LPGA. Very exciting stuff going on out there. We were just talking about antitrust and who's writing what for whom. It's just kind of interesting that programmers are moving away from Vista and toward Linux. I, for one, am delighted and thrilled to see that.
I'm seeing more and more folks like, well, by the end of this month, which is, 8 days away, most of your main manufacturers like HP, this is only for HP, Dell, Compaq, and all those.
The biggies.
Yeah, the biggies can no longer get Windows XP, whereas folks like Steve, I, and the other folks around can still get Windows XP until next January is what I've been told.
Dell just announced that they have extended the popular demand by their customers. they're extending XP. Although I think it's XP Pro, you can't get home anymore.
Right.
Let me see if I can find that
yeah,
story.
Yeah, I heard last, though, that as of the end of this month, they can't get anything. Who knows?
Well, it they may have made a separate
weekly.
Deal.
Yeah,
separate
it changes deal. Weekly. Because Dell carries a lot of clout, and right. They sell thousands
also,
of computers.
Also, if they sell
100,
if they just simply buy 100 million copies of XP right now, they'll be able to sell their stock, whether or not they actually have one. All right, our next caller is Maxine. Maxine, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Greece.
How are things in Greece?
Oh, nice.
Good. What's your question?
I keep picking up somebody's, it sounds like a ham radio broadcast on my computer.
Cool.
But I wish it would be cool if I could hear him clearly.
Yeah.
Turn up the volume.
What does it sound like, Maxine?
It's like a muffled, garbled talking all the time, or a couple of times I've heard testing 123 CQ, CQ. That's why I think it was ham radio.
Yeah, you're picking up the ham. All right.
If he's saying CQ, that's definitely ham radio.
Yeah.
What's probably happening is your speakers are not shielded well
right.
enough.
You need better speakers.
Or cables.
Yeah. A roll of aluminum foil. We were just talking earlier about the tin foil.
Yeah, right.
Wrap your speaker cables in tin foil as an EM shield.
Uh-huh.
Or get better shielded speakers. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I'm using the same speakers as my husband, and he's not getting them. He's not getting it.
Maxine, I'm going to recommend you contact the National Organization for Ham Operators, the American Radio Relay League, and you can contact them through arrl.org, and they have a number of resources available to help folks that are having interference issues.
It may not be you. It may be the ham operator overdriving the signal.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, if they've, they theoretically, well, they're not allowed to.
Well, they have a license to transmit, but most consumer-grade equipment is supposed to be well-shielded enough to be protected from a reasonable amount of it.
Well, and that's,
now, if he's
and
an
that's...
next-door neighbor running a kilowatt, there's going to be some issues, and they are solvable.
And that's one of the sneaky things when you see on the back of electronic devices about Class A and Class B, the commercial restrictions are less than the residential restrictions. So is that how it works? So a lot of like speakers and electronic devices are only rated for commercial use because as a residential use, there's too much interference.
Right.
But no one knows on that when they read the back of the packaging.
Right. Yep. But yeah, it may not. It may be your problem, particularly if just because you have the same speakers, are yours perhaps farther away from your computer or up higher?
He just whispered in my ear, it's coming over the computer speaker.
The sound card.
Pretty sure. He's pretty sure it's going over the computer sound card.
So if you unplug your external speakers, you get the same noise on your internal speaker.
Yeah.
Then the computer isn't shielded well enough for electromagnetic interference.
And right, that's very common. It's not the speakers, but it's the computer.
Maxine, if it's...
if you got a lot of paper clips...
You can, that's tinfoil still. Wrap the whole computer in tinfoil.
Or you can weave a Faraday cage.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't have the phone number at hand, but if you go in the yellow directory, I'm sorry, I said yellow, I meant the white pages, look up Rochester Amateur Radio Association.
I'll have the links posted shortly. And Chris, in another one of his hats, is past president of the...
Yeah, I'm right.
Yes, I am. That's how I know about this stuff. What was I going to say? Contact the Rochester Amateur Radio Association. They also have a committee that helps people with interference problems.
Okay.
We may be able to help you find the, I won't say culprit because he's obviously a legitimate operator.
Uh-huh.
If we could locate the gentleman, most hams, 99 and 44/100% of them, are very much gentlemen, and they will be more than happy to help you out. Solving the problem in a mutual basis.
Uh-huh.
I used to have this problem back in college when we set up a computer lab. Computer lab was four computers.
Right.
The Tandy was not shielded at all, so we had to put that in a different room because as soon as we turned the Tandy on,
all the other machines,
the monitor on our Apple II and our DEC and our every other machine would just go nuts because it didn't have enough shielding in it.
We had a rash back in the days when I sold Apple IIs of people who thought they had dead floppy drives. Because they wouldn't read anything.
Yep.
It turns out that the way Apple showed in their ads, you put your system together, you put the base unit on the desk, you put the two drives on top of that, you put the monitor on top of that, the magnet in the monitor would lift the read heads on the drives and they wouldn't read anything.
Yep.
If you just took the drives out from underneath the monitor, you won.
And the Rochester Amateur Radio Association is rochesterham.org. And their phone number is 671-2424.
Thank you, Steve.
That link will be up shortly.
There you go. So, yeah, those are the things that you need to try, Maxine. I think you're...
Now, a lot of people may notice when you open the cover of your computer, you may notice a metal inner shielding,
right?
Which is what it is. That's the magnetic interference shielding, or electromagnetic interference,
right? And that works both ways. It's to keep what belongs in, and what belongs out,
right? And particularly in laptops, that is basically a sheet of metal foil.
And remember, laptops nowadays, because we want to operate wireless, they're not shielded so well anymore.
That's exactly right.
One of the big issues with Apple's laptops. Their consumer laptops are plastic and get really good radio reception. Their pro laptops are aluminum and get terrible reception.
Right.
So there's a little gap in the aluminum where they have a rubber cover that lets the radio signals in and out.
Yep. All right?
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Let us know how you make out with that, please.
Okay. See, it's kind of like you live too close to Pinnacle Hill and all you can hear is Wham on any radio station you try to tune to, which great for Wham.
The lady who owned our house, I live in the shadow of Pinnacle Hill. I get great radio and television reception of every channel simultaneously.
Right. Yeah.
The lady who owned...
No matter where you're tuned. Exactly.
The lady who owned our house before us had the worst scare when she moved in and turned on her organ and heard what she thought was her dead husband's voice coming out of it.
No.
It was some announcer on Wham who sounded like him.
You know what I found out very interesting with Maxine? You hear the husband in the background.
Yeah.
And she had to do the calling.
Yeah, right.
How many times did you hear her say, do you want to talk to him?
Good going, Maxine.
Come on, Maxine's husband. Work up the guts and call it yourself.
Right, we don't bite.
You're a better man than he is, Maxine.
He secretly wants a ham license.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, Alex Vanderwall. I'm Nick Francesco. When we come back, there's a lot more good stuff going on. We've got more callers waiting on the line. If you're not on the line, I have no idea why you're not. We're just having too much fun here. If you are on the line, please be patient. We will get to you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And I'm Alex Vanderwerf.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And for heaven's sake, nobody tell Rob it took two people to do his job, will you, for heaven's sake? Don't let him know. He's got a swelled enough head as it is.
Oh, we just have to equal his height somehow.
Yeah.
We're just standing on each other's shoulders over here. You
know? What's that quote about standing on the shoulders of giants?
I was thinking the same thing. Convolve Inc. this week filed a federal lawsuit charging that Dell, Western Digital, and Hitachi Global Storage Technologies have violated its patents for vibration control techniques in hard drives and PCs. In the complaint filed Wednesday in U.S. District Court in Marshall, Texas, Convolve alleges that Dell, Western Digital, and Hitachi used its patented techniques that allow a device to move quickly with minimal vibration. Armonk, New York-based Convolve alleges that the three firms violated two patents that were issued to the firm. In the papers filed in the court, Convolve said its executives met with Dell officials as far back as 1998 to discuss a possible licensing agreement concerning the technology. To date, the paper said no agreement between Convolve and Dell has been reached. A Dell spokes individual confirmed that the company held talks with Convolve some years ago, but declined comment on the lawsuit. A Western Digital spokes individual said the company will defend itself vigorously against these allegations. Hitachi didn't say a thing. Okay.
Is this another one of those patent companies that all they do is buy up patents and sue everyone over some vague reference in their patent?
No, I do not believe so. Convolve actually created and holds this patent and tried to license it to everybody years ago. So this is not quite that same thing where somebody buys up a patent and does that. You know, they're actually involved in it. And you guys know, I mean, when you move a laptop, when you just pick up your laptop and go somewhere, you have to have the vibration dampening technology with it.
Mm-hmm. That's the rubber gasket that goes over top of the screw.
Yeah, it's a vibration dampening technology.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Bert. Bert, where are you coming from?
Palmyra.
Palmyra. What's your question, Bert?
Great show as always, guys.
Thank you.
Ubuntu Linux.
Yeah.
Been debating whether to take their online e-course. is it worth it? They charge $117 for a desktop course.
I can suggest something free before you ask that question.
Okay.
Screencasts.ubuntu.com. There's a series. Yes. Screencasts. Dot
Casts?
Cast. C-A-S-T-S.
It's like a broadcast only on your screen.
Okay, got it.
.ubuntu.com offers, there's somewhere around 20 different screencasts that take you through various scenarios of what you can do with the Ubuntu. Now, they're using, in the demonstration, an older version than what you probably have now if you have the latest. But the principles and the screens will look different, but the principles and the technology is the same.
And the screens will all look a little different, mostly the background and where a couple things are on the menu. Yeah,
so try that
first. Of course, I can't actually bring that up since Steve is sucking all the bandwidth. But.
as far as what they offer for a course, I can't speak to it. Don't know anything about its value because I haven't investigated it myself.
Yeah, I would suggest that, you know, take a look at these screencasts and try them first. They are, after all, free.
Okay,
and you can download them and keep them on your computer if you like.
And one of the questions you ask yourself is if you're just looking to learn for your own knowledge, or if you actually want to get a certification and a rating and start professionally supporting for pay, you know, Linux installations.
Yeah, that's part of it. I'd really like to learn how to work better with the terminal windows and stuff.
The other thing, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's it.
The other thing I'd like to suggest is you check out Lugor, LUGOR.org. They are the local Linux users group. Lugor stands for Linux Users Group of Rochester.
And there's a splinter group specifically dedicated to Ubuntu from that.
Yep. And that might be your best place to start. You know, the course will always be there.
Yeah.
Start with the free stuff.
Okay, thank you very much, guys.
Another thought is there are a lot of good books on the bookshelves of the local bookstores dedicated to Linux. I'm waiting for one that specifically addresses Ubuntu 8.04 myself, but any of them will help you with any flavor of Linux.
Yep.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
Bye.
That's the kind of thing I love to hear. A lot of people are starting to play around with Linux. A lot of people are starting to, particularly, you know, you've got that second laptop or that second desktop that you've had sitting around. It's not really quite powerful enough to run Vista. What are you going to do with it? You can leave XP on it and not play with it much because you've already got a Windows machine. Why not put Ubuntu on it? It's going to run a little slower, but you already know that because it's an older machine. Give it a try, play with it, see what you got. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, Alex Vanderwall, me, Nick Francesco, and you. When we come back, you will be strapping yourselves in and putting on your ear protectors. What?
Well, the message board is saying that they like looking at the two girls in the room instead of Rob.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, really.
And and we've got a lot more calls, so please stay on the line. If you're on the line, we'll be back with more sound bites on the greatest computer show in the known universe at 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. You know what that sound means. It's that time once again. So get your footy jammies on, grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave! Wake up, it's time for Story Hour. There's your music.
Okay, Mr. Wizard, where was your brain? Somewhere's on the backside, a dark spot? What I'm talking about, folks, is, and you folks should all be afraid, very afraid. Now, let me take you back.
Anytime we start Story Hour with Uncle Dave, I'm very afraid.
Well, this is concern for everybody. Everybody here in this room I know owns one of these. And what I'm talking about are flash drives.
Oh, yeah.
Now, back in the day, floppies. I'm talking about back to 8 1/2, 5 1/4, 3 1/2. They all had this little device called a locking mechanism.
Yep.
And how many questions did we get back then? Why does it say it can't write my file?
Right,
because you flip the switch to lock.
But yeah, folks have gotten so complacent, they go around with these flash drives now, going from computer to computer. Oh, here, take this and do this. And then folks wonder why their machines get infected with viruses and Trojans. Hello?
You can erase things. Things can get written to it. And that's how some of these viruses and Trojan are getting passed around, because everybody's using these flash drives. And Mr. Wizard, go back. I still have a jump drive that has a little switch on it. And I can open it and close it. And it locks the file. So this way, I'm not giving viruses or Trojans, and I'm not getting them from anybody else. It doesn't take a rocket scientist much to put a little switch on the darn thing. They're cheap enough. Add that extra little switch for the protection. Because otherwise, folks, you are still going to pass viruses and Trojans around. Be afraid. Very afraid.
I was listening to a podcast with Steve Gibson from Gibson Research, and they got a letter from a guy who was saying that in his security class in college, the professor had a presentation he wanted all the students to have, so he passed out a flash drive.
And it was infected.
Well, the 30 students in the class were all shoving it into their own computers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Any one of them could have infected it and passed it on to the next person.
More importantly, if that were my... I teach a security class.
Yeah,
if that were my class, it would have been a test and you would have failed.
Yeah.
But these folks, everybody, you know, has gotten so complacent that they don't even think about it anymore.
Yep.
And the folks, well, I don't go anywhere where I shouldn't be. But yet they're still passing these flash drives around.
Yeah, or I never open any files I don't know. Well, what about that one right there? Well, but my buddy sent me that.
It does.
He's my buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
you know, and that's the one of the main reasons I switched to a Linux desktop. Students all the time coming up and saying, "Would you look at this file?" And my feeling is, no, I will not. Who the hell knows where you've been?
Right.
I am not looking at that file. No. Now, of course, I don't care. I can do that. But then, oh no.
Mm-hmm.
Oh heck no. So be careful, everybody. It's that time once again to put Uncle Dave back on the shelf. Take off your footy jammies. Rinse out your hot cocoa mugs. We've given him his shot, and he's back in his rocking chair. Fast asleep for another week, which is where we prefer him. We're going to take a break. You're going to get the reason you really listen to Wham. You're going to get the news, the weather, the sports, all the very important things happening out in the big blue room. And on the other side of that, we will be back with a whole lot more of the nonsense that we do. It is 57 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, Alex Vanderwall, Nick Francesco on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And I'm Alex Vanderwall.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. Well, as you know, every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about web browsing, because we had all kinds of news stories about it, and 350 of you voted, making it number 85 on the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you. Of course, the number one winner of those 350 votes was Firefox with 76%, followed by Internet Explorer with only 13%. I'm very proud of each and every one of you. Followed by Other, followed by Safari, followed by None. Wait, what? And nobody voted for Lynx. I am an inconsiderate clod. Tony Placilla told me that himself, because I didn't have choice of like WGAD and Kerr and all these other things that he does.
So it comes from an authoritative source.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
This week, in case you had any doubt.
Yeah, right. This week's poll, interesting. New numbers from metrics firm Comscore show that in May, the battle of the social networking sites may have gained a new frontrunner. Facebook appears to have surpassed longtime rival MySpace in worldwide unique visitors for the first time. Comscore representatives said that this began in April when Facebook passed MySpace by a hair and widened in May. Facebook, according to Comscore, pulled in 123.9 million unique visitors in the month of May, beating MySpace's 114.6 million and with 50.6 billion page views compared to MySpace's 45.4 billion. It's been a slow but steady upward climb for Facebook, which was founded by then Harvard undergraduate Mark Zuckerberg in 2004. The site was restricted to members with email addresses from a handful of elite universities before gradually expanding to the general public and becoming a genuine Silicon Valley sensation when it kickstarted the developer platform craze last year. It was a very different story from MySpace, which was founded in 2003 and achieved mass market success in a relatively short time by gearing itself toward independent bands and their fans. MySpace, which is owned by News Corp since 2005, has nevertheless remained far ahead of Facebook in the U.S., where both companies are based. So the big growth in Facebook is outside the U.S. Social networking sites are becoming bigger and bigger things, specifically with teenagers, but with a lot of adults too. Some of them are social networking sites. Then there are things like LinkedIn, which are really kind of business networking sites. So the question is, which social site do you use? And the choices I'm giving are MySpace, Facebook, LinkedIn, Second Life, Other, Front Porch, and the Soundbites Forum, of course. And I'd love to tell you how many we have, but Steve is sucking down all the bandwidth. So yeah, I'm waiting, desperately trolling.
It's a good cause.
It's to a good cause. There's no question of that. And I'm just quietly waiting. 71 of you have voted so far. And unsurprisingly, Front Porch is first. Soundbites Forum is close behind. Other behind that. Second Life behind that. And one person does LinkedIn. Of course, there are multiple. People use multiples. But I suppose I should have said, which social site do you use most? But this is not, ladies and gentlemen, a scientific poll. This is not a poll designed to take the pulse of the nation. This is just a poll. Get over it if you don't like it. Of course, I know you people. You people are not satisfied with simply clicking a radio button and then clicking vote. What you want to do is say a lot more. So you have that right and that ability. If you will look underneath the poll, you will see a yellow box. If you click give us your opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Oh, very nice. Where you are allowed to put in your opinion up to 255 characters in the thing. And then take a look around at what I do. I put out a newsletter. You can search the newsletter. You can get in the forums and ask questions, all kinds of good stuff going on there. It's only $15 a year. I have no idea why you aren't joining immediately, right this second. And then, of course, on the Soundbites website, we have the forums and all the good stuff. We're running a chat room. If you can get to the Soundbites homepage, you can join us all in the chat room where people chat, often about nothing having to do with anything going on in the show, and that's fine. We don't care. And we're finalizing our Second Life website. We've been working on that. Dave's been building frantically.
Yeah, folks should come over because they'll be in for a big surprise on the island. I mean, if you've been there before.
Dave was kind enough to take my philosophy about building.
Yeah, I love it.
To heart. No walls. We don't do walls anymore. We don't build buildings. Like
all I can do is encourage folks to come and check it out. I've got on the main floor there, or on the patio, what we're calling the patio, that's the base. And then you can teleport. Nick just set up the teleporting to go either to the TechSmart or up to the espresso bar. But we also
Or the hot tub.
We have now a board there that you can get what I'm calling the program of the month. We're also going to put up a bulletin board to take in your suggestions. We're trying to do a lot more.
I'm creating a polling system so we can do polls. That's mostly for TechSmart, but we can use it for anything.
Yeah, well, we can set it up for down the Soundbites area, too. Yep. But we're trying to do a lot more to broaden your experience in Second Life. A lot of folks that have said before, I've talked to a few folks there that said, it doesn't interest me.
Right.
Well, until you try it out, that's all I'm asking is, folks, give it one shot, try it out. And see what you think. I mean, it's a totally different experience. I mean, I'm just amazed. Some evenings I go to this other island, and I'm literally talking to folks in Second Life all over the world. We had one person in from England, another person in from Australia, and then a number of folks. There had to be 9 folks in the group, literally around the U.S.
Yeah.
This used to be the big thing with ham radio.
Exactly. And that's what listen,
it's a way to socialize with other people, but it brings in a higher sense of presence.
Yeah. Remember when I built my first crystal radio set, I used the telephone. We had an old rotary dial telephone. At the time, it was new. Rotary dial telephone. And you could clip your antenna lead onto to the rotary stopper, and it ended up using the entire telephone system of wires as your antenna. And I picked up Radio Madrid, and
there you go.
I won the contest in our class for longest No, it's just this little tiny plastic crystal radio.
That's the fun thing.
It's really
radio's
cool.
Radio's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Rose. Where are you calling from?
Lyons, New York.
Where?
Lyons.
Lyons. How are things in Lyons?
Well, outside of trying to blow up my my laptop.
Oh, well, why don't you tell us about that? This sounds like an interesting story.
Don't let the smoke leak out.
Yeah, right.
Well, first of all, my husband went and bought a new laptop, and I'm trying to keep from killing him.
Sure.
Second thing is, it's Windows Vista.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it.
Go ahead and kill him.
Well, that
means you can now buy an expensive toy for yourself.
What I need
a wood chipper. I suggest a wood chipper.
Right now, I just want him to die. I don't care how he dies. I just need him to die. Only for 5 minutes. Then I'll get over it.
There we go.
I cannot connect to the internet. I have dial-up, which I have to use because I live in the country and there's no cable, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We're dinosaurs. And when I do finally get online, it goes to either limited or local, and it takes a while for it to go to the internet. Or when I do get on the internet, I can't go to my Thunderbird email. I can't use Mozilla Firefox. And I want this thing to die, too.
Could be before.
Before what?
Before you got this new laptop with Vista.
Before I got this new laptop, we had another computer. It was a desktop, and we had a power surge, and I lost the motherboard and the power supply.
But the internet worked okay on it.
The internet worked fine.
It's probably the Vista user access mess.
Yeah. Can I destroy it?
There is a way to shut all that security off.
Or at least minimize it a little bit. I think we already had a link about this. Let me find it.
Yeah, there is a link up there that tells you how to get rid of that annoying stuff that, Bill Gates thinks he's protecting you more by, putting all the security, but it only took the hackers a week after the first beta came out, and they had to do 6 patches to that because their secure system isn't that damn secure.
Yeah. I see. I think Bill Gates needs a lobotomy.
Yeah. And there are getting to be other options for high-speed internet, especially in the
Clearwire?
Yeah, Clearwire is internet over radio broadcast, basically.
Okay.
Cellular broadband over your cell phone system.
Okay.
Satellite internet over the satellite dish. So there's getting to be quite a few more options available.
Well, I need a few more.
Yeah.
Look into the Clearwire. You might want to check that one out, because they got a trial period that I think you can try like 3 or 6
months
out.
And their antenna isn't very big. One of the things with the satellite antennas, you have this 18-inch antenna you have to put on your roof.
Right. Okay. Well, but a lot of people comes in two forms, right?
Yeah.
One is a plug-in card, and the other is just an exterior box, which is a slightly bigger antenna.
With a Ethernet cable.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, for the Windows Vista, how do I do the...
We're trying to find that.
Well, dial-up?
Yeah.
Trying to disable the security in Windows to see if that's causing it.
Okay. Now, I have another question. I went from AVG 7.5 to AVG 8.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, would that have anything to do with it also?
No.
It shouldn't, but as a test, and remember to turn it back on, but turn it off for a minute.
Okay.
Turn off the Windows firewall for a minute.
Okay.
And see if those are part of the issue.
Oh, okay. I can try that.
Because it's probably the security settings are set too high, and it's so it's not letting you get to someplace you want to get
right.
to.
Okay, I have the security settings are set to medium.
Yeah, well, like we said, turn it off just to see if that does it.
Okay,
and
I'll try
in
that.
Addition, we're going to post the instructions, a link to the instructions on how to get online with Vista and do it all correctly.
Okay, and then all I got to do is get online and go to your site and check it out.
Right, which you can't do, of course, from your laptop. I understand
right.
that.
Right, but I'm sure I'll manage somehow.
I'm sure you will. You're a resourceful woman. Sell your husband, buy another laptop.
Right.
Put Ubuntu on it. All right, thank you. Thank you very much. We got to take a break. This is why we don't have a call-up domestic problem show. we're buying the wood chipper and shooting
the
bullets.
It's pretty easy. You go to your control panel, user accounts, and click the button that says turn off user access control.
There you go. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes on Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Justin Sawyer.
And I'm Alex Vanderwell.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Let's just go right back to the phones. Our next caller is John. John, where are you calling from?
I'm in Greece here.
How are things there in Greece?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Good. What's up?
I just got a quick question. I got the ABG 7.5, which has been free, and I know you've talked about it.
Yeah.
And then I get a pop-up window saying that it's now no longer going to be free and that you got to buy it.
You got to go to version 8.0, which is free.
Yeah. 8.0 is still free. Even so, it'll come up every once a year, I think it is, and make you renew the free license.
Okay, here it said that I didn't go all the way because it said it'll be $59.99 for the 8.0 version. It's a pop-up window that comes up.
Right. They want you to buy the full commercial version, which offers a lot of additional features.
That's only fair.
There still is a free version.
But so you have to download it by hand because it's now a new version.
Yeah. Should I just ignore that pop-up window then or what?
Well, what you want to do is download the new version. I'll say it again. You want to download. The old version is no longer going to be active if you don't buy it. So cancel out of that and go download the new version.
You got to do a little searching.
Okay. Well, free.grisoft.com.
Say that again, please.
Free.grisoft.com.
And Grisoft is G-R-I-S-O-F-T.
And they have a nice little chart showing you what all the differences are between AVG Free, AVG Pro, and the full security suite.
Okay, great, great. That's okay. Because then I would have got lured into that one for $59. I figured that was the only option I had.
$54.95 is the full security suite. AVG Pro is $34.99.
Oh.
And then AVG Free is free for private use.
Right, because, you know, I just do a little emailing and web, you know, through the internet. I don't do much more than that.
Yeah, you don't need more than that.
Yep. There you go, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, welcome. Thank you very much, John.
Take care.
You too. Our next caller is Mark from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Nick, you mentioned something earlier that I want to just touch base with you. You mentioned RoboForm may not be so secure with its encryption. I've never heard that.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, I don't...
You lost me on that one. So
I know RoboForm has... It has. The last time I looked at RoboForm was probably 7 or 8 years ago, so I just haven't looked at it since then. I would take a look at their website and see what they say about their encryption, because there are two things that are important. One is the ability to do all of that stuff,
right.
And the other is, in case somebody gets into your machine, you don't want just some file on your machine that's labeled mysecretpasswords.txt.
Yeah, no.
Right.
So, you want to be very careful about that and check to see that it is a high form of encryption.
One thing I would suggest is to register. It's not that expensive for the RoboForm. That's why I included, I'm thinking of including it on the Soundbite CD because it is just a few bucks, mm-hmm. and it does offer great security.
Oh, yeah. I paid for it.
And... One of the things is the length of your password. Sort of determines the level of encryption.
Right, it gives you a master password.
Right, if your password is less than 32 characters, it's only 128-bit encryption. If it's 48 characters or more, you get 256-bit encryption.
Right.
And we've said many times, the easiest way to get a good password is to take a phrase and take the first letter of each word.
Yep.
So, for example, if you chose... Now, this is very short... Right. But as an example, if you took the phrase, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, right?
Right.
You'd get a 15-character password that's ITWTBOFITIB.
Right.
Who's going to know that? All you have to know is the phrase you took it from. So any sort of poem you like or saying you like or... Anything else that most people don't know,
And then put a capital letter in there and then.
The word for or the letter for, the I's become ones, that sort of thing. Throw a random capital in there somewhere, maybe make all the T's capitals. But if you do that, you will have a very secure, again, depending on how long the phrase is, you will have a very secure password and you will have a long, unguessable password.
Yeah, no, that's not a problem at all. I understand that. It was just you threw out that comment that you thought RoboForm had didn't have very good encryption.
Well, it didn't used to, and now, you know, I haven't looked at it in how many years, and I admit that. I realized as I was saying that how long it's been since I really looked at RoboForm. So it's very possible that they're the best now. I just don't know that.
There's a similar program for the Mac called 1Password,
the
number 1Password. And Apple has their keychain utility built into the OS that does a lot of that for you.
Right, and there are a dozen that come free with Linux, so you're all good.
Right. All right, thanks a lot. I just want to touch base on that.
All right, thank you very much. I apologize for those of you whom I have scared beyond belief, but it's good when you're talking about security that every once in a while you question your assumptions and check to see what's what. We are going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, Alex Vanderwall, me, Nick Francesco, each and every one of you. You are in the process of listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, whether you're listening live or over the internet or via the podcast, or you have a friend actually speaking to you over the phone as he or she listens to it. It's 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And I'm Alex Vanderwell.
And at 31 minutes after the hour, that sort of live LPGA update is the reason you listen to Wham. They're on top of everything happening out in the big blue room all the time. Our next caller is Nick. Nick, where are you calling from?
Rochester, New York.
The hub of civilization in the Western world. What's your question, Nick?
Yeah, I was wondering if they make an external Wi-Fi antenna.
Yeah.
Is that tough?
Yeah.
And where could I get them?
It depends completely on which Wi-Fi card you have in your computer and what antenna jack it has on it. Most of the time, the company that made that card will have a an external antenna available for that card. There's a company on the Mac side called QuickerTech that makes antennas for all the Apple cards.
All right, because I have a XP operating system on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be difficult to do. You can also look at, I believe it's called Cantenna.com. Hold on.
Maybe .org.
Okay.
They explain how to make your own external antennas. We were talking earlier. Was that on mic or off mic?
Off.
About the
off.
Pringles. Pringles can makes a really good Cantenna because of the diameter of the can seems to be the right size for the wavelength of the radio beam.
Yeah, and it's Cantenna.com, Cantnna. That's just one of many, many sites that do that sort of thing, so it shouldn't be difficult to figure out.
All right, thank you very much.
All righty, thanks.
All right, thank you.
And that's a lot of the issue we talked about earlier about the construction of your laptop. Sometimes rotating your laptop 45 degrees makes it work better because now your antennas are in a different position to the transmitter and you get a better signal. What your computer is made of. So all the cool metal computer cases look really cool and they're really crappy for radio reception.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the smaller laptops have shorter antennas often. If they, you know, the ones that have the antennas in the screen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting set of parameters. Our next caller is Dave from Holly, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen and ladies. I have a Dell computer running Windows XP, and on June 17th, when I opened up Windows Express, I got a pop-up window saying message number 42 could not be delivered or retrieved, and that continued all the way to message 101. And when the inbox opened up, I had a whole bunch of failed-to-deliver notices, like 41 of them.
That's just spam.
Well, I run Computer Associates.
No, it's someone.
No. There. How can I best put this?
Someone.
What's
you
happened
know
is someone you know has a virus. That virus is sending out spam in your name because they randomly pulled your name out of the other person's phone book.
So you can ignore those.
There's nothing you can do about them until and unless you can find the person who did that. Who has that problem?
And it's in your list.
It's somebody you know, so
address book.
Theoretically, you could send a message to everyone in your address book saying that one of you is sending spam in my name. Check your system.
Ah, okay. But even though I tag that as do not approve or block these messages, they still come through. And it's still, even though I've cleared them out, it's still, when I do a send receive, it still says June
17th. What program are you using for email?
Outlook Express.
That's your problem.
Outlook Express has pathetic spam filtering in it, and you shouldn't.
You might want to look into Thunderbird. Use that for your email, and that's got better junk control. You can mark it as junk and have it throw it directly into the
problem is, if you look close enough at all those messages, none of them are exactly the same. There's a random text in the subject, a lot of times in the from, in the to, in the body of the message. So even though you say block this sender, every single message has a different sender in it. So it's impossible to block.
Okay. Very good.
Okay.
It may not be someone you know infected, because a lot of times the spammers will just, they'll make random senders. You know, they'll Steve@abc.com. You know, might be somebody for real. And then there's nobody to complain to when someone gets that spam, because it's a fake sender anyway. So it's virtually impossible to block that. But if you use a program with better anti-spam in it, then you may not see as much of it.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
There you go. All right. Our next caller is Todd from Gates, New York. Welcome, Todd. What's your question?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Well, about a month ago, I started getting all these pop-ups, real cheap, like websites, you know, like Fight and University.com. So I bought Spy Sweeper, so I didn't have nothing up into it. And it worked, but the stuff keeps coming back a little bit. You know, do I have to run that a few times to clear it out totally? You know, like
what antivirus program are you running constantly in the background?
Well, I didn't have nothing until I just bought this Spy Sweeper the other day.
Yeah, so but that's just spyware. What about a virus?
Oh, and it has virus, too. It's a combination thing.
Right. But it's got to be running in the background all the time. Spy Sweeper will only take stuff out when you run it.
Uh-huh.
But you should have something. If you can't set up Spy Sweeper to do that, you should get something else that sits in the background and does all of that. Kills your viruses as they try to come into your machine.
And we recommend several free programs that do that for you.
One is called AVG. It's from a company called Grisoft.com, Grisoft. Mm-hmm. The other is Avast at Avast.com.
A-V-A-S-T?
Right, as in R, me hearties.
That's something separate, huh?
Yeah.
I really like Avast right now, because it once in a while pops up and there's this ding noise and it goes, virus database has been updated. I love hearing that.
Yeah.
All right.
But, yeah, basically the answer to your question is yes, you need to run those programs all the time yourself, every time you get on the internet, because things keep...
Spy Sweeper and stuff?
Yes, okay. Because things will try to break in every time you get on the internet.
Yeah, so every time I go and sweep it, like?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, it don't hurt nothing?
Nope.
Okay, right. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks.
It just hurts your productivity, because you have to run these programs all the time.
Right, well, Avast runs in the background by itself. All right. I don't think we have time for another call before the break, do we? No, I didn't think we did.
I have an idea, Nick.
Uh-oh.
You were talking about social networks earlier.
Yes.
Let's develop a new social network called Spacebook. And even if it doesn't take off right away, think of all the free advertising we'll get from the notoriety we'll get by being sued by the other two big ones.
I love that idea. We'll make two. One is called... My face, and the other is called Spacebook.
All right.
All right, it's a deal. All right, while we're developing
Spacebook
our business plan. Yeah, I bet they both do. We're gonna take a quick. Don't try this at home. We are professionals. We'll be right back on the other side of the news on the other side of the commercials with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, Alex Vanderwall. There's somebody else in the room now. The room is getting more crowded than this room, and we've already got twice as many people in here as we should. We'll be back very shortly with the greatest computer show in the known universe. And at 39 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Jessica Sawyer.
I'm Alex Vanderwell.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Our next caller is Lance. Where are you calling from, Lance?
From Brighton.
Hi, Lance, what's your question?
Antivirus from AVG.com is easier than writing in everything. My wife and I have been happy with version 7.5 I downloaded the free version 8, was quite satisfied with it. Our son advised the paid version, and it has given us no end of problems. First thing it did was cut me off completely from the internet. Well, I finally got that straightened out. I'm not sure how. And now every 5 minutes I get a new warning that my wireless network needs to be connected. And when I'm using in-house a wire network anyhow. And there's been one problem after another with the paid version.
Right. The paid version does a lot more than the free version. And so you have to actually go in and set things up. It is an annoyance to actually pay and then have to do more work. But the thing is, when you're done doing the more work, you get more protection. You should follow the instructions. It comes with a file with a list of the instructions. And that will walk you through each of the various choices that are in the setup area. And yeah, I understand that it's an annoyance, but it is what it is, and it is what you need.
And that's one of the issues with a firewall in general, is its purpose is to block all your internet traffic from the bad guys. So you have to tell it every program you want allowed to get to the internet. And most people end up just clicking allow, 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 and then suddenly the bad guy gets in because they've allowed it inadvertently. So it's important to read what all those messages are. You said you're getting a message on your wireless network, even though you don't have one. Your computer apparently has a wireless card in it and is looking for wireless networks. So if you're not connecting to a wireless network, turn off wireless. Otherwise, your computer could connect into your neighbor's wireless network and be infected through that vector as well.
Right.
Most laptops have a switch on it somewhere where you can turn off the wireless.
Because, I have done that.
Yeah, it is a battery drain, so you want to make sure that's turned off so it's not trying to connect to a network.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I have done that.
Yep. Yeah, the pay versions offer you more features, but there's more setup and more configuration involved because of it.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lance. I appreciate it. Our next caller?
And he did, that's now free.avg.com.
Right.
Automatically redirects you to Grisoft, because no one knows how to spell Grisoft.
Right. Our next caller is John from Greece, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Well, since I installed the new version of SpyBot.
Yes.
When I try to connect to the internet, I get a message that says, do I want to allow a change in the registry? And I've been saying no so far, but I don't even know why I get this to come up, because I never had it in the old version.
Well, the new version actually does more. It does a better job of protecting you. And how do you connect to the internet?
I got dial-up.
It should be telling you what change it's requesting access to.
The registry.
Right, but what in the registry does it want to change?
Oh, I don't know about that.
And that becomes a problem, because even if it does tell you, you may not understand what it means.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to understand what it means.
Right.
Should I? Well, is there any way to keep that from coming up every time, or that's just the way it is?
There should be a remember this choice.
Yeah, somewhere on that same screen that comes up, you should have a choice that says remember this decision or don't ask me again. Well, if you keep saying no and it keeps coming back up.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, somewhere you need to be able to set that to...
Yeah, try uninstalling...
Do you think I should continue to say no?
Well, it depends on what exactly is getting wanting access to the internet. It could be a good thing, it could be a bad thing.
I see.
And without knowing exactly what it is, there's no way to tell.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll have to search around then.
Yep. Yeah, have you noticed sometimes you can notice something doesn't work right? Remember the old problem with Outlook Express?
Yep.
Where the actual .exe file was named MSIMN for Microsoft Internet Mail
News.
Well,
I haven't noticed anything that's strange, so I, you know, everything seems to work okay.
Maybe doing something innocuous like setting your default dialer program, since you said you had dial-up.
I see.
Which would be an okay setting. But it could be somebody bad trying to get out, which you would not want to make that change. So it's it's hard to say.
Without actually seeing the full error message and B, looking at the documentation of the system, I can't of the dial out, I can't really tell you what to do.
Okay, well, I'll have to search around then.
There you
All
go.
Right, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. We had an off-air caller We had a question about Second Life and sound bites. We've been talking about going into Second Life and doing some sound bites type stuff there. And the question is sound bites going to be shortened when Second Life starts? Well, yes and no. It's really the other way around. Second Life is going to start when sound bites shortens. During the fall season, during football season, there will be some Buffalo Bills shows that will preempt us. We will be live on the internet for an hour during that time, our first normal hour. And then what we're going to do
live on the radio, you mean?
Live on the radio. And then what we're going to do is, and we'll announce this before we do it because we haven't finalized things yet. We will then do another hour in Second Life so that people can get in and ask their questions and things like that. And
so that's why we're encouraging folks to sign up now and get the Second Life experience.
Right.
And try it out.
Right. And so we'll be doing that. And again, we don't know quite when, whether it'll be immediately after the live show, we'll do it here in the studio, or we'll all go home and get in our shorts and grab a beverage and sit down and do it that way. And will it be an hour? Will it be 2 hours? We don't know any of that yet. But we will figure it out, and we will let you know as we get closer to the time. It's not going to happen until September, so even we have probably enough time to plan this. We're going to take a short break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, Alex Vanderwall. And me, I'm Nick Francesco. It's 50 minutes after the hour. You are still listening, apparently against your own better judgment, to the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Jessica Sawyer.
I'm Alex Vanderwall.
And 54 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Had another off-air caller. Apparently there are people out there who are shy. And they would not like to get on the air, but they would like to ask their questions. And this person wanted to know how you get on to Second Life. It's actually very easy. You go to secondlife.com. That's secondlife.com. And you can read all about it and see all the yada, yada, yada. If you go all the way to the bottom of the page, you'll see kind of gray text. And the far left column, the fourth item down, is download Second Life. So that's really easy, or you can just go to secondlife.com/support/downloads.php. Steve will have that link up in half a moment. And what happens is that lets you download Second Life. You then sign on. You can either pay for a monthly subscription, or you can go in for free. If you go in for free, you can't own your own land, but that's pretty much the only thing you can't do.
The one thing we should tell them is you can pick your first name. The last name you have to select from a list.
Yeah.
So your first name is what you get to pick. So that's, and once you make, and here's the thing, folks, once you decide on a first name, that's it. You can't go and change it after. So if you get some cutesy name, you know, like a lot of folks are going by their names that they use in the forms, and then you pick from the list of your last names. You can't pick your last name. And once it's picked, that's it. You can't, you know.
Well, you can pick your last name from the list. And it's an awfully long list.
Yes.
But that's it. And once you download it, you install it, and then you double click on it. You enter that first and last name and your password that you've set up, and you're in Second Life. Then you can take your avatar, the little you that's in there, and change it around to look whatever you'd like it to look like.
And one of the other key things is once you first sign on, you go to the introduction island.
Right.
And that's where they teach you some of the basic stuff. Once you complete all the four tasks in the introduction island, from there, then you can go to any other island.
And if you look for sound bites, you can do a search for sound bites.
Well, we've got the Slurl on our webpage.
That's right. The Second Life URL on the webpage. So it's fairly easy, and you really want to go through that tutorial because it teaches you how to walk, teaches you how to fly. Teaches you how to find things and touch things and do things. And
then once you're there, we can give you guys so many different islands and that you can get free stuff and everything else.
It's actually fun.
Lolly's got a list.
She's got a list she's doing in our forums. You go down to the fun stuff forum. Lolly's putting together a list of that stuff. And we have one of the things that we'll be doing, like we said, is answering people's questions, sort of doing sound bites in Second Life, not necessarily on Second Life. You can talk about anything you want to talk about, but we're going to be in Second Life doing that, and that would give us... The good thing about that is it gives you the opportunity to get a lot more people in. It opens up a whole new audience for all of us and gives us a chance to answer even more of your computer questions and chit-chat and have fun and do all kinds of good things. Right now, we're kind of in the middle of building, and I'm trying to get a course finished. So I've been a little short with some people, and I want to apologize for that. I've been just actually busy working in Second Life for my job, but... generally speaking, we'll be playing around and doing all kinds of fun stuff. And that's it for another hour, 2 hours of Sound Bites. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to all of you to whom we did not get. You really have to call in earlier and more often next time. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who once again gives us his expertise and his abilities. Jessica Sawyer, Alex Vanderwall are wonderful. I love both of them. It's 58 minutes after the hour. I'm Nick Francesco. We are Soundbites.